So you worked at Katy, and then you went to work for KVOC.
KVOC, and there was a few months gap in there.
Yeah.
Because I got out of college, I didn't have a job. I wasn't at Katy, and I went over to KVOC finally after after my unemployment ran out. And Sid King was there and hired me right on the spot. Mm-hmm. Now I worked there twice too. I worked there for a while with him, and then Bob Woodward or
Woodside.
He hired me, and Alice Bubeck and her husband was there at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked there for about a year, and when I got hired at Automation Electronics. Now, when I was going to college at Casper College, one of the tours we made, we went through A&E, and I was impressed with A&E, and one of my friends at Casper College got a job at A&E. Well, he later went into the military, so they had an opening. The manager at A&E called me up at KVOC and said, we have an opening now if you'd like to apply. And I worked at KVOC and A&E for a while, but it was just a little bit too much.
Yeah.
Automation Electronics is an oil field automation company, and they did water flooding, which is kind of similar to fracking now.
Mm-hmm.
It was strictly water, not the chemicals. And they also built LAC panels, which is leased automatic transfer, which was the business end of the oil company. That's where they metered the oil coming through the pipe, and it had to be very, very precise. And they separate the sand and the water and stuff like that with metering so that they get a price of the actual crude that they were getting. We would build that equipment for them. And then we got into repairing various equipment that would come in out of the oil field. And we'd build control panels for other types of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I worked there 9 years.
Oh, wow.
And I got to be the head of the panel room, which was the room where the actual equipment was being built and tested and stuff. They had several other divisions. Larry Wing, by the way, came on later as their computer when they decided to go digital and put in a computer division. He became that. Now, Larry Wing was an odd character. He was very young. He had no education to speak of.
Other than Steve Brumell.
He was a genius. Going back to Katy again, when we were getting ready to move into the new building, we decided to have a new control board. Bad Daddy and I and Larry Wing would come in after hours, and we'd build these circuitry for the new board. But toward the end of the year of 1965, on Christmas Day, in fact, we moved to the new building, which was a little bit under construction still, but still pretty much ready. But the control room was not ready. And the reason was the board itself was not ready. Steve had designed this aluminum board. We decided we wanted it anodized, and we decided we wanted it sandblasted for a matte finish. We didn't want it shiny. And he decided we wanted it curved. Well, unfortunately, when we sent it to Denver, they punched the holes in it, and they said, well, if you want it curved, this is not too good an idea, because if we try to curve it now with all these holes in there, it's going to be discontinuities in the flow of the metal, and it's liable to crack. So we got everything else ready. We put all the preamplifiers in the little kitchen cabinet, in the circuit boards. Those were all ready. Everything was ready to go except the board itself. That's why when we moved into the new building, we set up the equipment in the bullpen.
Back in the old sales office,
right. We were there for like 3 weeks or something before everything was ready in the control room.
The moving from one building to the other, because I remember you got a great story about how you moved the records.
Well, this will make Alan Balker mad, because he desperately... See, he opened up at 6 o'clock in the morning. He was the morning man. I closed it off at 1 o'clock. Well, Alan was in the studio Christmas Eve, and he was bound and determined he was going to be the last voice on the air. I was determined I was going to be the last voice on the air.
From McKinley,
the 314 North McKinley. Well, I should have been the last voice on the air because I did the sign-off. It came 1 o'clock. I put on the
Katy sign-off record.
Joe Finger's car, I think, wasn't it? And I started, and I read the sign-off and everything. And Balker was sitting there like ready to pounce. And while the music was running, I ran around the back of the board and pulled the mic off. Pulled the mic cord. So he didn't see that, and he went ahead and said something, and this is, I'm the last voice on the air. No, you're not. So he went over to the new building. The 45s, this was clever. I got Rollo, who was one of my friends, and he got three or four of his friends, and Pat Meenan, who was the owner, came down in his Cadillac, or it might have been a Lincoln, I don't know, remember which, and we used mop and broom handles. In the old garage at McKinley, there was several shelves of old records that nobody wanted. I don't know why they even kept them. And then we had in the production room in the old building, we had a big shelf of albums and records. Now, I don't know how the albums were moved, I suppose conventional way, but the 45s, they would stick a broom handle in one end of the shelf and carry out a whole, like, 300 or 400 of them on a broom handle or a mop handle, set them in Pat Meenan's Cadillac, and he hauled them over to the new building, and then they just set them in the new shelf in the old record room. The console itself, Moose, or Larry Laverne, had a pickup truck, and he moved those. We moved the console over, and we set it up in the bullpen. We had like a card tables and orange crates that we sat on, and then they moved the modulator rack over and set it next to that. Fat Daddy and I, after everybody else left, after they had everything moved over there, after we got everything moved over there, everybody left. Fat Daddy and I started wiring up the console to the modulator, mm-hmm. which was all that was really needed. We went on the air at 1:30, I don't remember the exact time, maybe even 2. We went on the air to test it, and it was a little bit dicey doing that because at night, radio waves travel a lot better than they do in the daytime, and that's why we were only 250 watts, and we had to go off at dusk because we would conflict with other radio stations at night, like 50,000 watt. So it was a little bit dicey going on, but Bad Daddy says, well, we'll say it's a test, and we'll just go on for a few minutes. Need to adjust these volumes correct and everything on the modulator. So I went on the air and announced it was a test, and I put on a Burt Camfort record, which had the Free For All theme on it, by the way. I'm a smart ass, so I just popped on the mic and I said, if anybody out there can hear me, we're just testing a new studio. If anybody out there can hear me, write in and say what record I'm playing here. I gave him the name and everything, and we'll give you this record as a prize. Well, sure enough, someone in San Diego, California, wrote in, and Judy and the other gal had to pack up our free-for-all theme album and send it to him. And I got this all on tape. I recorded this whole thing, and I got it on tape. But that was kind of interesting. But that shows you that radio waves at night really do travel. Yeah. Now, they didn't travel all the way from Casper to San Diego. They went up the ionosphere and bounced down, skip, and back up and back down. So there was rings around different areas that would eventually wind up in San Diego. So